We're rolling.
It is 6:07 on July 11th, 2018, and I'm calling the July meeting of the Conservation Commission, South Kingstown Conservation Commission, to order. And our first order of business is roll call. Lorraine Jubert?
Here.
Vern Wyman?
Here.
Mary Talbot Robiano?
Here.
Christopher O'Connor?
Present.
Ann Heffron? And Jennifer James is also not going to be with us this evening. I am David Flanders. Joining us is Chelsea Seifert, the Director of Planning, and Doug McClain, Senior Planner. We have next order of business is approval of minutes for the June 6th meeting. Does anybody have any comments, thoughts, and minutes? You know what? I haven't gotten them, Doug.
So I don't know. You had an extra copy because you came in and picked yours up.
Yep.
Minutes before we finished those.
But anybody, does anybody have any other comments? Or, and if so, I'll entertain a motion to approve. Do we hear a second?
A second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, motion passes. The minutes are accepted. Item D is staff communication.
So before we jump into that, do you have time to stick around for this? Do you have time to stick around? Okay. So we're going to keep this in front of the application just because Chelsea's here as part of this communication. It can be pretty brief. I want you all to know I gave my notice with the town. I'm going to be taking a position with the city of Cranston. And there will be a staff transition occurring.
What position, by the way?
It's a principal planner with the city of Cranston. So it's closer to home for me. It's been a good run. Been with this group for the entire time that I was here, 6 years. It's been, good doing a lot of good projects with you. We've had a busy last 6 months with, I think, a very positive end of our work. Thanks, David. That's very thoughtful.
One of those cards with the dollar bill.
Hey! I like that. Watch Hill, huh? All right. Thank you very much. Oh, look, you guys are all in it. You guys knew this then.
Just this evening. Just this evening.
This evening. Well, thank you very much for that.
Plus, we didn't know the details. Congratulations.
Yeah. No. So it's, I want to keep it short, quick and short. There will be a staffing transition. Chelsea's available if you have any questions. Chelsea was just decided to join us if there was any conversation about it now. Otherwise, you'll be basically receiving, she'll be the point person, and if there's questions, and you'll be receiving emails from her. You'll have an August meeting.
Oh, we will.
We will, because we actually received a late application, so we anticipate something that we will, a formal item of business, we will need to review in August. That may not be the same person that you'll have in September, so it's anticipated there may be the staff person in by your September meeting.
There is a job opening. Is it yours then?
Yeah.
That's what I suspect.
They're looking for a new Doug.
Yeah.
There is no
a Doug. A Doug 2.0. So I don't want to delay our application. Any kind of questions about the process, the staff transition?
When are you coming back?
Oh, right away. I'm going to have 2 days at Cranston, and then I'll just be reapplying for my old job.
You're
ready to
so
go.
Sick of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be something people down here say more than the people in Cranston.
Yeah, that's
thus far.
Right.
That's not true. You haven't met them yet.
Because you've only met staff.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't met a lot of the public yet.
So I don't know, just to add to that, I don't know who will be your staff moving forward. I'm still trying to figure all of that out. It will probably depend on what the new person's skill set is and all of that, but we will keep you going as best we can in the meantime.
Great.
We anticipated there might be a break in August, but it does look like there will be something that we'll need to review and respond to. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
So we won't presume it. You'll let us know?
Yeah, I would presume you will be.
You will have a meeting. You'll need a meeting.
Okay.
You just don't know when it'll be.
Okay.
So.
And I mean, for right now, what I told Eric, and I think it makes sense, is to hold their regular meeting because that times out well with his anticipated.
I think that's right. I just want to make sure that. Because there's only two of us, so one of us can be at that.
Yeah.
If we can't, then we might have to reschedule it. But
so,
for now, it looks like it's a good day.
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Okay. So it's the August 1st.
Okay.
Great.
Should we move on?
Please.
Okay, this is advisory opinion to the Zoning Board of Review, Special Use Permit, Zoning Ordinance, Section 504, location of OWTS, proposed four-bedroom dwelling with OWTS located within 150 feet of the wetland, located at 34 Ocean Avenue, Plot 93-1, Lot 69, Mary Kate and Jim Dillon, applicant owner, Tom Northup, builder representing them.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for entertaining seeing me tonight.
And just let us know your name for the record.
My name is Thomas C. Northup, Jr. I'm the owner of Southern Rhode Island Builders LLC. I'll be the general contractor on this project.
Tom, do you want to just begin by giving us a very quick overview of what you're proposing to do on the site?
Sure. The structure that's currently on the property now is not conducive to year-round living. And as such, the homeowners have decided to move forward with raising that building and then establishing a new home that they can retire in. They plan on living there year-round. And in order to do so, as you know, we're required to upgrade the septic system to conform to standards that are required as of this time. The rest of the structure does not require any additional special permits as it conforms to all the setbacks and requirements. So this is strictly just for the septic system itself.
That's not what it says on the plan. The plan says that it requires 5-foot property relief on the side.
It says it requires variances for distance from the...
That must be a misprint. Well, the variance is for the septic system from Potter's Pond.
That's why you're here.
Right. Yeah. The actual, I think it's on here, we're not taking up any more. They're not extending anything. They're mimicking the footprint as far as the setbacks from both sides of the property. There's 10 feet from one property owner on the left, on the right-hand side, and I'm not sure I'd have to actually look here on the print.
Do you have any, I was going to ask if you had plans, because we didn't get any.
Yeah, you guys had the septic plan.
That's all we have. We don't have the layout or the design of the building.
Well, the design of the...
It's the dotted line overlay and on this?
Yes, sir.
That's the footprint only. We don't
right.
have...
That's all.
Right. Right. Well, this is still a...
Yeah, generally, we wouldn't provide a lot of the details of the building beyond just the site plan.
Right. Okay. Only because, again, it was my understanding through the attorney and the architect and engineer that the only requirement was going to be for the special use permit for the septic, because as you know, we couldn't even apply for a variance along with a special use.
Right.
So,
but this does say
that
there are three issues.
5 feet divided from the property line, and 10 feet is divided. It says 50 feet from the.
Right, I think that's giving you what's required. Typically, what's required. We meet the side variance or the side setbacks without any problems. It's my understanding the only issue was with the.
What about the septic system?
So you are 10 feet from the property lines on the side.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I think that maybe what happened is that Dowdell has a note from a...
Oh, maybe a previous...
It could be an error.
That has to be an error because...
It
should show it on that site.
Yeah, the plan itself shows a 10-foot side yard.
That must be a note that someone didn't correct the catch.
Well, actually, isn't it the sand filter that's within 5 feet of the boundary? But that wouldn't be...
Probably.
Because that does show a 5-foot setback.
Maybe that's a DEM code then.
Yeah,
or the
maybe
code
that is,
relief.
That could be a DEM code.
And that's not pertinent to the town's consideration because we don't have a town requirement that the sand filter be more than that.
Now on the permit application, it states that the existing 4-bedroom house is 600 square feet.
Yes, sir.
4 bedrooms and 600 square feet.
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yeah, it's 2 stories.
Oh, 2 stories. Okay, yeah. So it's 1,200 square feet.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
My apologies.
Yeah. This says 494 square foot roof area of the existing.
That could be accurate. I unfortunately, and I will open to it, I didn't get everything, and it's Doug will tell you, until about, 4 days ago, 5 days ago. So I did kind of rush through this, and I took some notes that I had as to apply for the square footage, so I would definitively go by what they had listed on the map.
Well, if it's listed as 600 in one place and 494 in another, that's a pretty big difference.
Okay, there's no way that it can be 494 square feet. It's two stories. There's four bedrooms.
No, just roof area.
Oh. Yeah, well, the roof area, that could be, that wouldn't be, that wouldn't be impossible to understand.
Why, is there an existing deck?
Yeah.
The other issue is the 3-foot separation to groundwater, where it's required to be four under section 504.
Okay. I know that the system itself was approved by the Department of Environmental Management. I don't claim to be a septic engineer. I do know that I touched base with the engineer, and as I explained to Doug, I asked him to be here at this meeting tonight. I don't know what all the requirements are typically, but as such, he assured me that this is exactly what needed to be done to be the most efficient and allow for everything from flooding to extended use, extended power outages, and items to go along with that.
Right. Well, it may meet DEM standards, but the town standards are designed to be more protective of groundwater and the pond.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have section 504 does have design standards pertinent to drainage and to set distance from septic. I know Dowdell has done these for us.
Right.
But if that is the case, it's something that may need to be revisited by him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that we can adjust whatever we need to adjust to make it work, and it's certainly something. That's why I said I came prepared to take a lot of notes and get back to him with whatever was necessary to.
As proposed, it looks like we're placing this 1,200-foot building with a 3,525-square-foot building, pretty much three times the size.
Correct.
One problem that this commission has run into for decades, literally, is that calling it a four-bedroom house doesn't limit it to that number of people. In the summertime, particularly with such a large house, there can be three times that amount of people sleeping on decks, some more people to a room, these kinds of things, putting a strain on the pond through the septic system, regardless of what kind of septic system we have. So the size does concern me. I asked if you could move the septic system between the house and the road. And apparently the applicants were unwilling to do that because of the interference with the driveway.
Well, not just the driveway. Actually, the water from the town runs right into the front, right through there also. So we have an issue where there would be no access to the home to utilize it to put a vehicle.
Now, if we move the house back to closer to the road to the where the existing house is and eliminate this bump in the back, we would get another 22 feet away from the pond.
So you want to shorten the house 22 feet?
No, shorten the house 10 feet.
Okay, I don't think that they're willing to compromise on the size of the house.
It's pretty big.
Well, it isn't that big, actually. It seems big, but there's actually a lot of deck space, not a lot of house space. They put four decks on this house. They put a small deck on the front, a second, and the floor plan is actually reversed, so the bedrooms are on the what we'll call, you have a ground floor for the garage, then the next floor up is the bedrooms. There's a deck off the back of that. And then when you come upstairs to the top floor, there is a deck off the back of that, which has a spiral staircase up to a roof deck. So a significant amount of the square footage of this property, of this home, is deck. They really enjoy it. The problem that I see, without having any engineering knowledge, with moving the house closer to the road is the deviation in elevation from the road to the existing property. As it stands now, I'd estimate that it's probably somewhere between 18 inches and 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, they'd have to apply for a variance, which we know they can't get, in order to change the elevation of the property in order to allow them access.
There couldn't be design modification for 2 feet?
Not from the height. I'm actually referring to the height of the road to the property. There's actually a 2-foot drop.
Okay.
So in order for me to change that, I'd have to actually go to CRMC and ask for a variance in order to change the elevation, in order to be allowed to raise the. And they're not going to. They're not going to go for that.
Filling wouldn't be a good idea.
No, but that would be the only way. Otherwise, you'd have too sharp of an incline. You wouldn't be able to stop drainage to the house for road runoff, snow, or anything like that. It'd be, you wouldn't have that opportunity.
So has that been a problem with the existing house?
No, it hasn't been as it is now, because they're far enough off so that it can actually disperse to the left and the right. But if we moved it back 10 feet, there'd be no way for it to go anywhere other than into the property, into the house, the garage.
But the existing foundation is 12 feet from proposed new foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So if we moved it 10 feet, we moved this block here, 10 feet of the building, 10 by 15, and then moved this back to the existing foundation, that would be a problem? That would be the elevation problem?
Yes, sir.
But you said it wouldn't be, it isn't a problem with the existing house.
Well, it's not, okay, because the existing house doesn't have a garage downstairs. There's no garage, it's just a foundation, it's a crawl space. So there's no problem there. But if you tried to move this forward to now the garage door is only 10 feet from the road, that any kind of runoff with a 2-foot decline, the water's gonna go right there. There is no way for them to deviate or to divert the water in any other direction other than right into their garage. And again, I don't think they're gonna be willing to remove a section of the house off the back. The house is very narrow as it is, so they're trying to make the best utilization of space. And I think maybe it's not the best because you don't have, but you're proposing, this is the deck right here. This is the 10 feet that you want to get rid of.
I don't know. If I'm just looking at this,
right,
and that doesn't jive with
well,
the 10
I know. Well,
no, this or here.
So that would literally remove, so you want to remove a bedroom and make it a 3-bedroom.
Well, you've got a lot of this space here. You could, design around that just to make the setback.
I can assure you that because this is going to be their retirement home for them and their kids and their grandchildren, they're not going to be willing to give that up.
Well, let's get back to the reason for this ordinance.
Yes.
Why this is required.
Mm-hmm.
The pond is considered a special resource protection water body.
Of course.
Other ponds are impaired. We're trying to restore impaired ponds and prevent the ones like this one that are not impaired from getting worse. And the issues have been nitrogen loading from the septic system,
mm-hmm,
and nitrogen from the runoff.
Right.
So from the property. And CRMC, in their initial studies of the salt ponds, recommended a density of 2 acres per 3-bedroom house,
mm-hmm,
basically. And this is so far smaller than that, where there's no comparison. I mean, the loading of nitrogen from this tiny lot is far higher than recommended by CRMC. So our job is to try and minimize those impacts to the extent possible.
Sure.
And that can include reducing the size of the house. First of all, you would have to demonstrate with calculations that the impervious cover,
mm-hmm,
including any impervious walkways or patios, is under 15% for the lot area.
Correct, which I believe that is. I mean, I have that here. I don't believe that is an issue.
Okay, so we just have to see the calculations. Issue is the 4-foot separation that I mentioned from the septic system.
You mean the depth?
From the depth to water table at the BSF.
Right. It's supposed
to be. Which would just be a matter of raising the sand filter depth.
Right.
Up. And then the other issue is meeting, demonstrating that you're retaining the increase in runoff for a 25-year storm.
Yeah, correct.
And you have those calculations also?
I do believe the engineer has those. That was something that I asked I. Dowdell about.
Okay.
And again, and I can only apologize that as much as I wanted him here, he said, when it comes time for the zoning board, he'll meet with that particular meeting. And basically, I was kind of left to wing this a little bit. So
right.
I openly admit I'm in some uncharted territory here.
So those are the issues that are per the ordinance, but also minimizing impacts to the wetland buffer to the extent possible. And in the past, we have routinely tried to move the house further from the wetland buffer to protect that buffer.
Sure.
And also to minimize the size of the house for also the issues that David raises about future use. So
sure.
You're you know, the current owners may just be using it for themselves and family, but they could have a lot of family over, and they could rent it in the future or sell it in the future for rentals.
Well, the one thing that I to get back to what you were talking about for just a second, and I think you guys all have the map that shows the house, how close it is right to the corner there of the road. The when you're saying, no, you don't have to give up a room, you can just cut off this, you have all this deck space, that doesn't really minimize the size of the house, that just takes away a deck, is basically what you're saying. But it takes away the first floor and the second floor deck, so now they have no deck on the back of the house, or they have to give up a bedroom. That's basically what you were proposing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, I mean, I'll be honest, I think that's a little unrealistic. I understand, and I grew up two lots over from this, so I've been on Potter's Pond. I spent the snowstorm of 78 down there, so I'm really familiar with Matunic. And I agree, I want nothing more than to continue to see blue crab and see the pond restore itself. When I spoke to the engineer, when I spoke to Odell about this, I knew that that was one of the concerns that the commission was going to have. Doug had kindly gave me that heads up that, you know, you guys feel very strongly about this. I asked him outright if this was the best design with the least impact on the environment that he could produce for us at this time, and he told me that it was, that this is state of the art. So I don't know exactly what state of the art means, other than I would assume that it is the best that they can do currently. Mm-hmm. I know that it is designed to handle significant floods and to become functioning again once the floods recede.
So it'll be raised on pilings?
The house?
Yeah.
No, the house is not going to be on pilings. It's going to be flood walls on the lower level. There's a garage to park underneath on the lower level.
But the house itself will be above that?
Yes, the living space will be above right. that, definitively, yes. And the other thing is the areas that you mentioned removing also house the HVAC condensers for the air conditioning and a generator. That's actually hidden on one of the decks in the back area. Because as you know, they have to be above floodplain, so... Then they couldn't be mounted to the side on the right due to the setback. So that was another reason for the size of the deck in the back actually incorporates those to do two things. One, to allow them to be utilized, and two, aesthetically, you don't see it. So, and for me, aesthetics is also important. You know, you don't want to see a giant box.
So it's 35 feet from the ground?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the basement, or the bottom level where the cars would be parked, mm-hmm. is that left as sand, or is it paved?
No, that is concrete. It's my understanding that's concrete. I have that plan here. It is concrete. This is actually the plan of that here.
You could use that for infiltration if it was sand.
Right, but you couldn't use it to park your car. And
why not?
Well, it wouldn't be weight-bearing. And then my concern at that point would be any vehicle that you parked in there that happened to have some type of a fluid leak would directly go right into your system. And then with the sand there, it would actually allow, I would have to say, it would probably allow for worse contamination than if it were concrete. The garage is also here. So this is storage space here, and this is the stairway in the foyer to get up to the upstairs. So in order to leave this as sand for filtration, I'm assuming that we would have to leave all of this as sand. So then there would be no sense in putting any walls in the lower half of the, because then you couldn't utilize, and then they lose all the storage space.
Mm.
And the garage area.
If it's going to be a flood zone, they can't really store anything there.
Well, no. I mean, they can use it for what we call soft storage as far as chairs and things like that, but nothing hard storage.
Mm-hmm.
And the obviously the garage is strictly for the motor vehicle.
Okay.
Or you know, I guess it's technically for the boat.
Okay. So can we get clarification on the living area, the size of the living area currently and proposed?
I think he had a better, pulled the number for
you
the
current. You had 3,000 proposed.
Yeah, according to their calculations, if it's going to be 50 feet by 20 feet and a half, it would be 3,525 square feet.
Living area.
That's including the decks, yes.
Oh.
And
what is it not including decks?
Well, I don't have that number, but I know that the roof deck is 14 feet 6 by 16 feet. Decks are 22 feet 6 inches by 10 feet. And then there's a small front deck. I believe that small deck, front deck was 6 by 12, if I remember correctly. It's a slight balcony over the front.
And are those decks above the first floor? So
yes.
That it doesn't drain through. It's part of the building footprint.
It's above those, neither one of those decks, none of the decks are on the ground level. The very first one would be on them.
But they don't extend beyond, do any of the decks extend beyond the livable area?
Yes. These here, this is actually your side view right here. So you have one deck here that sits over top, that's the small deck on the front balcony. Right here?
Right.
Then you have the two decks off the back, they extend past the living area. The roof deck does not.
Okay.
And then this is a view of the balcony from the front. This also gives you the front door of the home and the garage door, which those would both be significantly. That's where your impact area would be to move the house closer to the road.
So if the 50 by 23 and a half includes the deck, so with the deck measurements that you've given, you're looking at 1,800 square foot living area.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's right about
it. According to the tax assessor, story is 480 for a total of 960.
960, so it's double.
It's double.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. You
know, I've often wondered that very same question that you asked, though, quite honestly. It's we limit the number of bedrooms, but we have no way to limit the number of people. You know,
and we do. So I don't know if everyone's aware, but we have an ordinance in town that if we have more than three unrelated persons living in
right.
You have to go through development plan review and have the right way to be tested and submit your application and your parking and all of that. So
no,
if it were a transition, we would catch that hopefully, but if it could.
I was talking about a weekend thing or a week-long vacation thing.
Don't regulate that.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we don't
Because that still would result in an overload of the system. Into private fine.
Well, it could be, I mean, I'm sure it would definitely be a heavy use.
Yeah.
I'm going to note that. I can talk to Odell about that, and ask him what the contingency is for that as far as heavy use goes. I'd have to assume that with it, the system being designed for catastrophic flooding and then becoming functioning again once the waters recede, that it would be able to handle some heavy use.
And you could also, in your recommendation, say to the zoning board or recommend that they condition the special use permit on not allowing rentals that would exceed the capacity. Right, so the zoning board will get the DEM approval. And the DEM approval will say how many and what occupancy that is based on.
Right.
So you could, in your recommendations, say to them, we recommend that you limit future rental of this property to the maximum occupancy allowed by the OWTS.
Right. I was just looking at the situation where the kids and the grandkids come down and their friends come down.
And you have people sleeping on couches.
And the deck is a nice night, you know.
Yeah.
And it's
basically
is
unregulatable.
Right.
It is unregulatable. At the moment.
Yeah. Anybody that's ever been down to Matunuck, you've pulled down there and seen 15 cars parked in a driveway
with tents set up.
And I understand that. I definitely do. And I don't think they would be opposed to what you stated. You know, actually, I know they wouldn't be opposed.
It's good for the health of your GIS system, too. You don't want it overtaxed.
Sure. I don't disagree with that, you know. And, and they're very much, they like the pond also. So I know them personally. They're actually friends of mine, and you know, they just want to move down here and live down here year round. And if you're going to build a house, you want to build the house that you want one time. And, you know, and that's really what their mindset is. You know, they're very willing to work with either zoning or yourselves, I'm sure, other than making the house smaller, because again, they have five children. So I mean, you know, they kind of
to my point.
You know, right. Yeah.
But this is the only time we'll see this, right?
Correct.
Right.
I recommend so that the commission make a recommendation that might be conditions, but that generally you won't have repetitive.
Right. So they won't be working with us.
No, but here. Right, we'd be done here. However, obviously, when the zoning board takes your recommendation, any recommendation and or asterisks that you may put on it, as far as above and beyond what you might recommend, as long as we know about them ahead of time, so that I can address them at the zoning board. And with Dodell, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think they'd be pretty open on, like you said, it's just as far as raising the sand filters. That's an easy one. He probably should have picked up on that, and I'll probably make fun of him for it.
I know there are rules at BEM about the distance from a septic system to a water line. Do you know what they are?
I do not.
Because it seems to me that there would be room for the septic system in front. I mean, it doesn't have to be in this arrangement. The tank and the drain field can be on one line, and you can probably get a variance from DEM if they require 10 feet. It's already 5 feet, right? So you're already getting that.
You mean in front of the front door and leave the garage free?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't
see... Well, the water line is on the right-hand side, and the utilities...
Right, I see the water line.
Right, and the utilities come underground from right here. The electrical comes from over here also.
Right. But then the drain field and septic system can be on the other side.
I don't think that area in the front is large enough to accommodate everything that you're referring to.
No? Looks like it is, based on footprints here.
Yeah, and then how do you support the weight bearing of the vehicles driving over the filtration system?
So, well, you wouldn't be driving over an above ground system or the lines, ideally.
Right.
You'd be closer. Can you drive over the water line?
I would. No, you're gonna. That would put you in front of. You drive to the front door instead of into the garage.
Well, you might have to kind of reconfigure the entrances. You know.
That would cause a complete redesign of the house.
Well.
I mean, I'm just letting you know. As you're presenting them to me, I just want to be able to.
All those issues really should have been addressed in the
right.
design, in terms of moving the house and septic system, yeah. at least a septic system further away. That should have been a prime
right.
issue in design.
When again, I asked that question absolutely specifically, why is it in the back behind the house instead of in the front? And he said, due to the water coming into the home and vehicle traffic, access to the house by vehicle to the garage, he told me that it was not possible to put it in the front.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the engineer, that is right out of his mouth, that it could not be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an engineer, so I can only go by what you told me. And you actually prepped me with that, you know, like one of the questions, you know, you said, hey, you know, make sure that you have some answers for these. So I asked all the questions that I thought I could. But that was the one that he was adamant about, based on whether water comes in, water utilities and vehicle traffic didn't allow for it to be in the front of the property.
I don't know. We're still increasing the living area by double.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I trust me when I tell you, they would like nothing more than to be able to raise the height of this house and change the so that because every time you pull in the driveway, you literally drive down a very steep and more or less an embankment to park now, because their parking is on the front lawn. What is the front lawn now? They would like nothing more than to be able to raise the whole thing. Every time the town comes down and repaves that road, they don't regrade it. They literally come down and go over the top. So you can see where the property has actually gone up probably 12 inches in the past, you know, 15 years with repaving.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to believe the engineer was truthful and honest when he said there was no way to relocate it to the front of the house. Again, not being an engineer, I have to take him at his word that was not possible. I don't know if it's the size of the filtration system or the tank itself. I just don't know.
I think they're pretty standard for a four-bedroom house.
Right.
You know, typically, I mean, are the other houses in this area four-bedroom or three or two?
Let's see. The house next door on the left-hand side is a three-bedroom. The house on the right-hand side I don't know how many bedrooms. I'd assume it's probably three bedrooms, but they are going on a conventional septic system. They don't have a denitrification system or anything yet.
Well, the drain field for advanced treatment is smaller than a conventional
right.
one. It's just a huge house given the size of the lot and the other constraints.
And it is a substandard lot.
It's
to begin
a very, very tiny lot. The CRMC recommendation is ideally 2 acres, and we're dealing with a fraction of an acre.
Right.
So it's a lot of house with you know, given the site and the constraints. And I think even though people want the McMansion, you can't always get a McMansion on a tiny lot.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. But as she noted, without the decks, the living space in this house is not a giant house.
Well, it's still double from what's existing.
Correct.
Yeah,
but the bedrooms... The current bedroom size, one of the bedrooms is 8x10. Mm-hmm. So if you put a queen-size bed in there, you're walking on the mattress to get into the... Mm-hmm. You know, I understand what you're saying. Actually, if you come down like two houses over... That, hands down, that's a 2,800 square foot home. So that is a McMansion. 1,800 square feet is not a very large house at all.
Well, DEM often restricts the houses in these situations to 2-bedroom.
Correct.
So I'm not sure why they didn't do that in this case, because there was already...
It's already existing. It's already a 4-bedroom home.
So one of the things that, in the performance standards relative to OWTS, one of the things that you are... to give a recommendation to the zoning board on is that they have minimized wetland and site disturbance, and that includes resulting in least disturbance necessary that has been located as far as possible away from the wetland edge. So I would say, since you don't feel comfortable with the answers to that at this point, in your recommendation, you would have the applicant provide evidence that they have done that, right? That the zoning board asks for specific evidence that all of the other scenarios have been assessed and deemed inappropriate or unacceptable, so that they can make their determination based on that evidence. The other thing that I was just looking at here, and I don't know, maybe I'm just not in the right section of the law, but the performance standards that I see for OWTS design, so 504.3, gives two sets for the distance between the bottom of the leaching field and the seasonal high water table. It says for conventional OWTS design, it's no less than 3 feet. For advanced technology OWTS design, it's no less than the distance required by RID. Those are the two that I see in the law. So I don't know.
Maybe he went with the.
Yeah.
Maybe he went with the Rhode Island DEM. And then
although it does say for critical resource areas, is this considered a critical resource area?
This isn't.
No less than 4 feet.
I don't believe that this is considered a critical
so
resource
those are your,
I would think
three
that
distances?
The salt pond area is a critical resource area.
If it is,
yeah,
then it'd be
that's exactly why.
But I just don't know because it's not considered impaired. But I don't know what
it's still considered a critical. It's still part of the salt pond management.
Because it's
plan.
In the same.
So,
it's
yes.
Perfect.
And it's also a DEM designated special resource protection water body.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have, does our own zoning have a definition for critical resource area?
No.
Yeah.
That's why.
So generally, but what we ask is that the engineer needs to attest that
right.
the plan meets the regulations.
Well, I would suggest that if the engineer has already done everything that he says is possible, we'd need a third party review. We'd need someone from an independent review that hasn't been tied to the case.
I mean, you could recommend that the zoning board ask the town engineer to review the evidence submitted, right? So the zoning board asks for evidence. They make their decision based on evidence. Once it's submitted, if they don't feel comfortable with it or they want a second review, you could recommend that the town engineer review that evidence and determine if they agree or not.
Mm-hmm.
That would be your third-party opinion. Otherwise, they wouldn't necessarily, the town engineer wouldn't necessarily review that. They're not part of that process.
Right, I
yeah.
understand.
And generally what
the
zoning board
the
is looking for is...
The town engineer has experience with these types of developments, though.
The town engineer is new. He's a landscape architect and an engineer. He came to us from Garofalo Engineering and has done lots of...
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's
had...
Yes,
he's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So generally what the zoning board is going to ask for is testimony, and that testimony is provided by the applicant, and they have to provide that. That testimony
right.
has to basically be in accordance with the regulations, the engineer.
Right.
I mean, the applicant has the choice to provide whatever experts they feel, address the concerns and would provide the testimony they feel would be give the zoning board the best information to make a decision. That's certainly something you can ask. The Concom can ask is, you know, upon submission, that the town engineer provide a review. But generally, that's something that we haven't planned on, and basically we're counting on the town engineer providing a review based on the timetable that they may not, you know, depends on how much time the applicant has submitted their information before the zoning board finalizes their packet. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah, although, I mean, if the zoning board opens their public hearing, they decide they want more information from the town, or they decide that the town engineer needs to give an opinion, they would continue the public hearing, get that information, make a decision at the next meeting.
Yeah.
So, special use permits, as I recall, although I haven't looked it up specifically, don't have a time by which you must make a decision.
No.
So they can continue that public hearing until they feel like they have enough information.
They certainly can. Yeah, especially, I don't believe that a special use permit has a time frame, but I think generally the zoning board attempts to make sure that they've got all the information that they can have available available on the first meeting.
So and as I stated, it is my intent, should I have to bring him there under duress, that the engineer is going to be at the zoning board meeting. And I think that a lot of the questions that you're asking are fair. I wish I had better answers to some of them.
I think for this type of decision, that's a hearing where generally they're counting on the expert testimony.
Yes.
So you would need someone that, given the nature of this application, can testify that these meet the standards that the zoning requires.
It is a self-inflicted bad situation. I mean, I would be so much happier if they had found two adjacent lots and doubled them up. I mean, this is a dream house on a nightmare lot. And we're trying to squeeze it in, shoehorn it in. And it's just unfortunate that there isn't more somewhere up in this general area, that there aren't two lots that are adjacent to each other that would be available to them.
Yeah, those houses down there don't switch hands very often. Mm. You know, they stay within the families. And, you know, again, I mean, the house itself isn't even really the issue, honestly. The system, it's the site and the septic system or the upgraded septic system, because they want to build a new house, that becomes, that's the special use issue. The house is going right through standard permitting. There's nothing above and beyond. So, I mean, I have to say, at the very least, by approving this system, if the commission, even with whatever stipulations you have, by approving it, you're actually improving this, the health of the pond, because currently they have a substandard, what I would consider to be a substandard, old-style septic system. And you're right, if they have a party of 15 or 20 people come down, you know, that's what you're dealing with. So the sooner we get this old system out of the ground and whatever provisions that you come up with, the recommendations, get the new system in the ground, the healthier the pond becomes almost immediately.
Anybody have any more questions?
No, just a sidebar question, but the proposed access path, is that pervious material there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to picture
where
the
was
dock.
This for?
The pathway out to the dock, which is in the buffer zone.
You know, crushed stone or...
And, you know, this pertains more to the use of the property. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's a dock there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Anybody trying to get a boat down, a trailer down into this would be... Hopefully, the boat goes in somewhere else.
They actually put the boat in right on the ramp on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Is that a public ramp or is that an association ramp?
No, that's a public ramp. That's a public ramp. Trust me, all the neighbors around there have issues because people drop their boats and try to park their cars on top of everything that they can.
Right.
And I don't know how to do it, but.
I'd like to make a motion. Unless there's any more discussion.
No, let's go.
This is a difficult lot with a site that is having an increase in the building livable area. Doubling the increase in the building area, livable building area, on a very tight house.
I'd say approximately doubling. It's a little less than double.
Okay, approximately doubling. And it appears that there hasn't been any real effort to investigate whether the septic system treatment unit and drain field could be moved to the closer to the road and away from the wetland edge in order to maximize wetland protection. It's a very, very small house and potentially could see a very large increase in wastewater loading with the doubling of the living area, given that...
Very small house?
Given the doubling of the living area.
You mean the existing house?
It's a very small lot.
Lot, you said house.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Very small lot, given the increase in the livable building area, and it could see an increase in use, a dramatic increase in use, especially with family and friends visiting on a regular basis. So we're concerned about nutrient loading to the pond and lack of wetland buffer to help alleviate and treat that nutrient loading. We would recommend that the issues regarding percent impervious cover and retention of the increase in 25-year storm in volume and rate of runoff be addressed by calculations of the consulting engineer.
So what was the second part of that, the 25-year?
You're required to demonstrate that the 25-year storm, the increase in volume and rate of runoff from the 25-year storm will be retained on site. So we'd like to see evidence of that standard being met. The distance, separation distance in the leach field from the top of the leach field to the bottom should be increased from 3 to 4 feet because this is a critical area. And we would like to have a review and recommendation by the town engineer to verify and make recommendations regarding whether the house could be redesigned and the septic system redesigned to move the septic system closer to the road, given the water line that is present and access for cars. There may be some way that those modifications could be accommodated through redesign of the site and the house itself. And we request that the town engineer assist in providing a recommendation to the zoning board.
Anybody have anything to add to that? That's the motion on the table. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay, further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you guys very much. No, thank you very much.
No, no, not a problem.
You put this position.
No, no, it's okay. I mean, it's you know, it is what I'm still trying to remember where I know you from. I do know you from someplace.
I'm a piano technician. I have an arborist license.
You may have come to tune a piano one time.
Yeah.
That I remember. Honestly, in Westerly.
Could have been.
Yes, I'm quite certain of it. I'm pretty good with names.
I'm in my 40th year.
Wow, so you're getting pretty good at it now.
I'm leaving.
Oh, okay. You and Doug both. Doug, thank you very much for your service to the town of South Kingstown. I know I speak for a lot of the contractors in the area, and we all had a good conversation about it. We're having a party for you. Probably
great.
You know about it?
Yeah, no, let me know.
Yeah, it's the day after you leave.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Contractors will be there.
I have to run to Smithfield, Rhode Island, to see my daughter's championship softball game.
Oh, sorry.
All right. Thank you very much again, Board.
Thank
you.
You
guys have a good night.
Okay. Next
the contractors are giving you a party.
I'm sorry.
The contractors are giving you.
Yeah, that's a standard practice in any municipal relationship with contractors. Yeah, you know, so they give you a big party once you leave. If they're happy, you're leaving.
They throw their own party.
Yeah.
They have their own party.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a lot of contractors are going to invite me very soon.
Let's move on to discussion of next steps for the plastic reduction ordinance. Certainly one thing that's come up is education of the public. We do have till January 1st, barring voluntary compliance, but ways to get the word out to various businesses. And I had thought, and I don't know how practical it is, except for the fact we do have this amount of time, is for the town to make up an 8.5 by 11 flyer that would be visible to somebody who walks into a business. Perhaps we would carry them in our cars, and when we're in a particular area of town, say, oh, those guys, you know, I could give them and approach them and do it that. It's you know, shoe leather, but we did, you know, 32 businesses in 3 days.
Yep. And I think that just so people are aware, you know, I think the commission can certainly contribute to this effort. Maybe that what the commission.
Sustainability.
Yeah. So the as folks might recall, the commission quarterbacked the development of an ordinance and the initiation of this recommendation to the council. The sustainability committee offered to basically be the lead for what would happen next, and that would be educational efforts. But it's not just education around the fact that we have an ordinance, it's education around what is sustainable shopping behavior. And I think that the CONCOM could assist with that, and because your interest in this issue is to see what you can, you know, where you can advance this, both from let's make sure that everyone understands that an ordinance is on, you know, has been adopted, and also what are the other pieces where people can understand it's not just, you know, ask for paper, but, you know, how can you, the spirit of the ordinance is to reduce single-use bags in the first place.
Remind me who the commission member on sustainability was who used to be on this one.
Oh, you mean, so who was in here before was the historic district, Andrew Martinez.
Andrew. So, Andrew says, I'm going home making bags. And that was one thing we brought up at the meeting. We said this is going to be a whole entrepreneurial thing.
And that was HDC before, Historic District Commission. But sustainability has scheduled a public forum in which they envision addressing solid waste issues broadly with the community. And one of the main of the topics they want to discuss, one of the main topics, is this plastic bag ban. Did anyone here, I know David, you did attend, they did a community forum about 9 months ago. Did anyone here attend that? It was kind of like a broad sustainability forum. They had pretty good attendance. They had about 60 to 70 people, and a lot of the people that came are organizational leaders. You know, you had like a Kate Venturini from URI Cooperative Extension. You had people from Eco News. You had, you know, generally, you know, some people from Rhode Island Resource Recovery Center. They envisioned that they want to basically gain public feedback on some of these topics, but also understand where are there avenues and resources for the community to assist with this education moving forward. So it's not just about, you know, hey, let's do education for the people that come, but those people that come generally are already people that buy in. Like, I agree, I do think that we should be making sure this happens, but how can we activate people? How can we activate businesses that are there, or people that are familiar with businesses? And so whatever we might think about, if it is the development of a flyer, I think it should be done in partnership with the sustainability. Maybe there's a piece that we take on. And also the thought that that forum, which is scheduled for October 24th at 6:30 at the Rec Center, I'd recommend, you're all going to get an email because you guys get emails when we have forums, and you generally get those, dear board and commission members. But keep that marked in your calendar as an opportunity for one, as you lead up to it, what's the partnership that could exist? What is something that this group could do that could assist? And maybe it is development of a one-page flyer. Think about that forum as an opportunity to kind of unveil and also ask for people to assist with the distribution. So it doesn't have to be, you know, necessarily all of the CONCOM trying to provide this to all of the businesses.
Right, right.
And generally, you know, there are other opportunities here. You know, it could be, where is there education around? We're going to ask Dave McLaughlin if he's interested in speaking, and if they have ideas or resources that are helpful for communities in transition. So we'll be thinking about other players that are there and how that might kind of help shape this awareness effort moving forward.
I think there's also going to be an inadvertent or unplanned piggyback I mean, just this week, I noticed the first thing you see when you walk into Belmont's is a huge display of the bags. It used to just hang by the checkout counter. And I think the more people's awareness get to that, A, they may buy a bag and take it to another store, or B, other people from other stores are going to be seeing this thing and say, what's going on? Or what's that for? And so I think that's, it's going to be word of mouth as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, there's going to be a point where there's only so many businesses that rely heavily on these bags, but there are a number that are probably little, I can see how there might be some that just fall through the cracks. They don't otherwise hear about it. I believe, the town is intending, I'm speaking for, my other staff that would actually be the person that's doing this, because I'm not doing anything beyond tomorrow.
Beyond tonight, really.
I think the town is intending to have some public awareness around this. It'd be, a posting on the Facebook, there'd be posting on the website, there'd likely be some sort of news, display ad, so that people just understand, what it is that has been passed. But there's no way to, identify, here's the mailing of all businesses that rely on plastic bags. That mailing address list doesn't exist. So it is going to be a lot of spreading the word. And as people discover, it's nice when they know that, one, it might be nice that someone approached them to give them this information and resources in advance of them discovering, now I'm going to have to conform to this new regulation. And two is, if people are asking for, what can I do, what's available, it's nice to know that there's resources that they might be able to reach for,
Well, when the chamber rolls out their new bags in, a couple of months, maybe, who knows?
So the chamber is planning, those that might be aware, the chamber's planning a reusable bag initiative. They're going to, they took money that we dedicated from our budget resources, they matched it by an initial set of reusable shopping bags, and they are doing a design contest now. So you can actually go on, if you follow the chamber on Facebook or you wish to, you can learn more about their design contest. I think they're trying to make it a grassroots, community-driven effort. It's not a logo that they want to be the chamber's. It's a logo they want the community to develop. They want this to be kind of a bit of a branding effort.
And great publicity, too.
Long story short, there's a few different players that are working on this, so I think the Concom isn't working in a vacuum, and it's more about realizing what is the piece that we can contribute to, and how can we use the other players and, the sustainability committee, their forum, the other people that would be attending that already have, kind of a reach and broach with other businesses or other outreach, venues to help get the word out. So a little bit of this is, one, making sure businesses are aware, and they may have resources like, hey, you should have this flyer up because it's helpful for you to communicate to your patrons, and they can expect it as well. And it's also to make sure patrons are aware that, here, this is, to anticipate this, that you don't come into a business and suddenly are surprised by the fact that no longer getting the same bag that you could have before.
I don't know if a flyer is going to be visible. I never notice little flyers, going in or out of stores. I mean, there's always a bunch of them there.
Because there's too many.
There's too many. So I think it has to be something that's super obvious, like a banner, or something on foam core that you can put on an easel that's big, and then when you walk in, you see it, like a display thing. It's not just a piece of paper, because it's just invisible to people walking in and out.
I guess it depends on the store, right?
Yeah.
Some stores, you have those stores that might have a number of banners, and little display. And if you're thinking about a Belmont, no one's going to see an 8.5 piece
of
paper, but one of the boutiques on Wakefield,
maybe if they put it right on the door.
Or right on the window, exactly.
Right on the door, so you're facing it.
Yeah.
You could provide a number of these flyers, or half-size flyers, and ask them to put them in people's bags as they hand them out over the next 4 weeks or 4 months. You could do more of a bag stuff.
I like that.
That's a huge amount of paper.
It's a lot of paper.
Yikes.
Less paper than if you're mailing it to every tax bill.
Well, that's good.
You want people to see it. You have to,
Yeah.
Or they could print it on the back of their receipts instead of the ads.
I don't think those machines are set up to
They're
do what
up.
They do.
Those ads come pre-printed to the stores.
Yeah, I know. So they could plan in advance to have that in the back instead of the ads.
sense.
And they'd have to pay for it, because they wouldn't pay.
And would they actually read the back of the receipt?
Yeah, I
like her idea. It's pretty, a little
thing. I
think
a bag stuff is a...
Yeah.
Something people look at. You're unpacking your groceries and you have...
I mean, what we want to do is provide businesses with a resource that they think, what's the best way for them to transmit that information. So some people might say, you know, for our businesses, like, we have small business and a little visible piece of paper on a stand. But they might, you know, like, I'm picturing, like, the range of business types. You know, you've got your, like, what is it, like, pink pineapple that probably just needs, like, a, you know, a cute way that they display that notice right at their checkout.
And put it everyone, in an 8x10 frame on the checkout.
Yeah, and then you've got your shops, which, you know, they may have a more significant signage, or they may do a bag stuff, or they may have something that they've already adopted as a policy for how they spread the news of this in all the Massachusetts communities and Barrington and others that they've already done.
Yeah, it would be interesting to first see what the others have
done. Yeah. And a lot of it is, there might be businesses that are like, thank you very much for showing us you have a town notice, but, you know, our policy when we make this transition is X. So those larger businesses like your CVS, your Rite Aid, so sometimes this is maybe a resource that can be used as the business might find applicable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the idea is, would, and I think the main question is there value in the Conservation Commission providing such a flyer, and then how do we maybe partner with the sustainability so they know we're doing it, they see that and can kind of anticipate it and make sure that there's visibility and a plan for some outreach around that.
You know, touching on what I mentioned before, I forgot, CVS and Rite Aid and Job Lot are all going to have to do this, and they get a lot of foot traffic. And so they say, what's the deal? Say, well, there's now an ordinance. And by the way, here's a bag you can
Buy. But they have done it. I mean, Newport, Middletown.
They've done it.
It is kind of good, though, to have that.
But I'm saying that if it gets a lot of South Kingstown traffic, then it's going to spread the word for us.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when people talk, I think that a lot of this, people are concerned with enforcement. I think there's going to be a lot of self-policing here. Businesses that aren't aware that this exists, and there could be small businesses that we don't read the paper, no one sent us a piece of mail, I didn't know this happened. Largely, it's going to be a consumer that's like, oh, are you guys aware that you can't be handing out that bag anymore, and that this is a potential violation, and they're going to say, oh, wow, it's time for me to read that ordinance.
My question for you would be whether you, as a commission, want to focus on educating the business so that they know that it's happening, or educating the consumer so that they know it's happening, because those are two different campaigns.
Right, but both are needed.
Both are needed, right. If you were focusing on the business, then direct outreach discussions is sort of the better way to go. If you're trying to focus on the consumer, it doesn't necessarily have to be through the business. It could be in some other way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be necessarily tied together.
But one way, I mean, because it's really at the checkout.
Yeah.
So in some ways, in the ramp up, that's a good place to face people with what's coming down the pipe.
Right.
And at the same time, if the business is cooperating with that display, it really, you know, puts it in people's minds, basically. So that may, the idea of the gift shop, I can picture that, and that actually is a good idea. Could be at each of the grocery facilities as well. And then again, too, I think, you know, part of what the Sustainability Committee spoke to, and it's almost like, what's the gold standard for cooperation with this? Because ultimately, it's get into the habit of shopping with one time, with multiple use bags from day one, no matter where you are, not just even within the community, versus using paper in lieu of, you know, and requesting paper or whatever. So there's that opportunity to say, you know, this could take the steps that go beyond that.
Yeah. Which it sounds like the thought is that our information, a flyer, might be developed for your consumer, but actually is
posted
to some degree best the assistance in how you would post that could be with the businesses.
And when you approach the business to sort of alert them that this has happened, you can have a discussion with them about how they'd like to alert their customers, and then we could, you know, customize that for them.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think largely the item was placed on our agenda because this group had a role in quarterbacking the ordinance, and I think there was certainly interest from this group in, you know, what could we do to assist moving forward. I would say, you know, the quarterbacking has probably handed off where the sustainability is you know, having a forum. They have a punch list of items that they wish to address. And some of them are, you know, making people aware of the ordinance. And some of it is, you know, how do we promote sustainable shopping behavior in general? How do you, you know, even take another step farther and have people that are don't need as many of the divider bags for their produce or nuts or grains because they're coming with, you know, prepared, you know, jars or containers that they're bringing for home. They're probably going to be thinking about personal, individual practice, and that's a little bit of what that forum is going to get at. But I think that what I would say is this group thinking about if it has a certain piece that it can plug into and then making sure that the other, you know, like the sustainability is aware and they can use that and help kind of take that to the next level.
Now, does EDC want to be involved in this at all?
I met with the EDC last week and we didn't have a long, this just didn't come up in discussion and we didn't, other than they have individuals on that group that I think are really interested about.
I agree.
You know, the fact that it went through and are supportive of the fact that it went through. I mean, I always say the EDC is a group that could be used for opening lines of communication with businesses, but this seems like it's a separate kind of campaign than stuff they've done before. And almost, you know, sometimes it could be something where they're given a courtesy, like, hey, we've developed something, EDC, you know, for businesses that you're aware of, can you please help distribute this? But I don't know if I see them as being like a player in the development, but I could see them being a player in, okay, you know, here's our plan for outreach. Maybe the EDC can help them make sure this gets out to their contacts. But I mean, it could be, something that develops. And we've got time.
One thing I would like to see the Conservation Commission look into is the idea of equity relative to using a reusable bag. We heard brought up several times through the process that people are concerned about low and moderate income families in our community purchasing bags. And so I'd be interested to have the Conservation Commission do a little bit of research about how other communities handle that, or if they address it, whether the town should be offering, you know, subsidized bags or free bags, or if there's some sort of best practice out there to deal with that issue. I don't think anyone is looking at that. You know, sustainability has education. Nobody's really taking on that question, and we heard it come up, you know, several times.
And it is one of the things sustainability is looking at, but they don't have like an answer yet.
Yeah, so that might be someplace that, you know, you guys could give some research, some guidance if you want to stay involved.
For example, a Johnny Cake food pantry currently uses plastic bags. This regulates business establishments, so it's unclear exactly how they might, you know, if you're giving away food as opposed to selling food, but they still have a point of sale. It is something that, like, hey, in keeping with the town's intent, but there's a lot of people that, you know, also count on, like, let's say the Johnny Cake thrift store. Can you imagine going to the Johnny Cake thrift store and being told, okay, you know, now you need to buy a bag with the $2 worth of clothing that you're looking to purchase?
It might be because those are retail outlets that the town subsidizes the bags to the outlet, and then they give them out as they, you know, for the first 6 months or something.
Yep.
It might be something like that, but there's definitely an unanswered question there.
Yeah,
right.
And it could be that the answer to that question is something that we are able to suss out through research. I know from what I've heard from those communities that have done this that, you know, generally you might have a community partner or two that can lead the effort. And I have heard that communities have found funding, community partners, like a Johnny Cake Center that's in a position to, like, you know, basically a lot of their clientele are considered to be, you know, lower moderate income, or generally they're trying to avert cost. And that they found, you know, grant opportunity sponsors so that they can purchase these so to provide them at no cost for people. So that's one option, but we haven't, like, I know Johnny Cake has been engaged in this process and they were very supportive of it, but as of yet we haven't activated them to say, okay, what is it that, you know, maybe they may have a role, or what opportunities can other community nonprofits find to help with the subsidization of bags. So subsidization, I don't know if that's a word, but it's close. Subsidizing, yeah. Close. Yeah.
Tell us again when it takes effect.
January 1st.
This year.
Yep. So I think what you've got is you probably have wanting to make sure that the October 24th public forum that the Sustainability Committee is planning is likely, we want to anticipate what we have done and what could be done before that, and then also have a pretty firm plan for what will happen after that.
Yeah, that's coming.
Because at that point, you know, we want to be doing our education, you know, at least in advance of this. So we're talking about, you know, October, November, December.
You could give holiday gifts in reusable bags instead of wrapping paper.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Can you say that again?
I do that now.
Yeah.
Wrap your gifts instead of in wrapping paper. Wrap, just put them into a bag. Tie a ribbon on them.
Right. Oh. But to the point regarding the John King Center, so we don't know though that they haven't voiced an issue or concern, have they?
They were very supportive. We engaged them.
I know they were supportive.
Yeah, they were supportive.
But of the other end of it,
they haven't.
The use of
plastic. No, they didn't voice a concern about this will impact our population differently than others. It's just something that I think the Sustainability Committee brought up as a concern when this is generally an ordinance like this is done, that we should be thinking about equity, and there's no plan in place. So,
and I think Johnny Cake Center, at least what I heard from the discussion, is that their plan for right now is to transition to paper. And if that's not really what we intend, or if that's not really the sustainable shopping practice that we want people to do, then we might need to help them figure out a way to get to that sustainable practice, right? Because paper is not the idea. So they might not have a problem meeting the ordinance, the like letter of the law, because they'll just put paper. But if that's not ideally what we'd like them to do, then they might need a little.
As it did sound in some of the conversations, they self-disclosed they use an awful lot of plastic bags. So, and is the intent with the chambers, you know, the competition, and then ultimately a bag with graphics of some type on it?
Yep.
Would that be something that we would have? The intent would be to have one or two, or maybe, you know, local sources who can produce it. That it's going to be accessible to the businesses to acquire that particular bag.
Oh yeah, that is the intent.
Volume purchase intent. So yeah,
their intent is to distribute. The chamber would distribute the bags to interested businesses, and they're looking to get as many different interested businesses as they can. Mm. They would sell the bags at cost to the business.
Yeah.
Let's just say for a rough number that they are able to buy the bags at, you know, cost at $3 a bag, for, you know, something that has a town logo. And then they make an agreement with the business that the business can't sell the bag for more than a number that, you know, might be like $4, which the business then says, okay, make $1 a bag, that's fine, but, you know, I'm contributing to this.
Yeah.
Then there's generally a kind of, you know, the bags are available. The hope is that these bags become available in many different locations in the town, as many different businesses that would like to participate. All of the money that the chamber takes in is going to be designed to basically buy more bags. So if the program is successful, there's a lot of bags purchased, then the program will become self-sustaining, and at the chamber, if they say, like, oh, wow, now there's such a demand, we need to buy more, they can take it from there. So, but yeah, I think the chamber doesn't have a great point of sale itself.
That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking even, you know, these days, if it's orderable online and whatnot, even the businesses themselves could directly acquire. Ultimately, and then it becomes more self-sustaining.
It could be, and it could be that the chamber is able to help, you know, spark that kind of interest, get these out there, and then there seems to be a demand. I mean, you look at the Charlestown bag, I think they sell those bags for $5 and $7, and they're extremely popular. I think that the bags seem to be popular amongst tourists because it comes across as a cheap souvenir, which maybe is not the target audience, but they're still popular, and they're, you know, they have to buy in bulk, thousands at a time.
I've seen them in my clients' homes here in South Kingston.
Yeah. So, not that we want to follow the Charlestown model, because the town is not looking to sell bags. The town isn't in the middle. The chamber is. But I mean, if there's sort of a way that the chamber can operate this more efficiently by making the businesses capable of ordering these directly without the chamber being the middleman, I think that they're probably interested in that.
That might help all around, and obviously drive the price down. I mean, if you have a competition, see who can produce.
I know they're working with a local print shop, And I think they're trying to find the best source of bags, and that source of bags, depending on price, may not be local, but that doesn't mean that the sources to purchase through might still be local.
Yeah, yeah, that would be great.
So
that's
Dave,
really the reason you're leaving, Doug, is because you thought you'd get stuck with that.
I did. I absolutely knew that when the town started selling bags, I'd be the bag peddler. And I said, that's it. That is not what I came to do.
Well, sorry, Lorraine.
I can't wait for Cranston to undertake it.
Yeah. Cranston with their huge
bag. Because you'll be such a
bag.
Wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, I go to Cranston. We heard you're great at bags. You've got a lot of bag work.
Contact
Your reputation precedes you. What were you going to say?
Are you still coordinating with the Sustainability Committee? So I'm wondering how we're going to coordinate with them at all. Except at the 24th, meeting on the 24th.
I guess we'll be kept posted. I mean, I get their agenda, and if there's something that I find pertinent, you know, but and I get the planning board agenda for work sessions and stuff, too, for things that come up.
So their plan is not to meet in August. They're going to meet again in September and plan the rest, plan the forum. October 24th is too close to December 31st for my liking. I think if you have things that you want to start doing
the holidays,
educational, you should just start doing them.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they're right now their plan for education is sort of this forum, and there wasn't, at least I didn't see last on Monday's meeting, they had a larger plan. So if you have ideas, you can start moving on them. We will coordinate for you. Right? We know what they're doing. We know what you're doing. We'll sort of try to mesh those things together. I wouldn't hesitate to start on something that you want to undertake. Yeah.
And this group will meet again in August, so you'll have an opportunity to think about, okay, what's a formal idea and plan that we
want
to
have. And if you want, I could be the liaison with the planning department for you.
Sure.
If you have an idea, just come here.
Yeah.
So in this material, in the material that Clean Water Action provided up to this point, is there information on how they help the towns with communication after?
No,
what we haven't seen. I mean, they have a lot of good information for towns that want to consider a bag ban. I'm currently not aware what they might offer for towns that want to resources for a transition. Mm-hmm. I think we were, and it's one of the things that I have on my long to-do list for tonight is to. Dave McLaughlin is going to get an email from me with Chelsea CC so that he knows that he can follow up with someone that still works here. Basically to ask him, to invite him to the October 24th because we did want to have speakers that are familiar with this from a range of different kind of backgrounds and expertise. But mostly to talk to him. It's possible. So I think my goal was to ask him, one, do they have resources for communities in transition? Mm-hmm. And then two, let him know that October 24th there was an invitation for him to speak or one of his colleagues to speak if they do have, they do feel like that's something they can speak to.
The other thing might be to ask him if he knows of current contacts in other communities that if he doesn't have materials that we could contact them.
Good. And I think, I would actually ask Chelsea if, that what he gets back is something like, we have great resources that, she could make that available so you can see what they are and maybe help, react to that as well.
Because, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. I'm sure all these other communities.
And I think a lot of it is that as long, if you guys have something that, here's something we can contribute to, we think it's a great idea. Right now, the sustainability wants to do work. They have a meeting in September, so they've got a bit of a break, and they probably will need to hit the ground running in September with what did we really want to do, because if we're doing it before January 1st, we need to start. Mm-hmm. They probably would be very open to help. They're going to say, oh, great, that's a positive contribution. So if you guys come up with either we have a thought or plan or want to develop a flyer based on information that, maybe you're able to assemble by, within the August meeting. I'd say staff can help, coordinate, make sure that the sustainability is also aware.
Yeah. Would it be all right if I emailed Dave and asked him, what the Aquidneck Island did?
Absolutely.
And then I'll share it with you and you can share with sustainability. Okay.
That sounds great.
Okay.
I'm going to be looking for as much help as possible while Doug trying to fill Doug's position. So
yes, shorthanded. Any other thoughts for now, or should we move on? All right, discussion of next steps for the Wild and Scenic Rivers Stewardship Plan.
Mostly just as an update that this was adopted by the council, or that the plan was accepted by the council, that the town is a participating member, and that they are still going through and basically seeking resolutions from the other communities within the watershed. Once they do, they basically come back to U.S. Congress and they seek a formal designation, and after that there is a development of a committee that monitors and kind of oversees the watershed and improvements in the watershed broadly through funding that is allocated through Congress. So mostly I just wanted to make you aware that that is, the town has kind of completed its review of it, and that we would be notified once they've completed the process, and that, if there is a group established, that, there might be some ideas that could be generated about what in South Kingstown are the types of work or types of projects that would be most ideal for that type of improvement. So it might be interesting to see when they've developed a plan and a study committee, or a committee that administrates funding, hey, in South Kingstown, what's most helpful for us is either this physical improvement, or this type of education for homeowners that exist in that watershed, or this group might be helpful in terms of helping give feedback on what the fit is. So no actionable item, just a quick update on that.
Okay. Discussion of Conservation Commission work plan prioritization.
Yeah, and
that's
it is an ongoing item. I did this one mostly because we've done a lot of heavy lifting over the last 6 months on the plastic bag ban. But at this point, we have a bit more of open agendas moving forward. And the thought is, I think right now, because we're in a staff transition, it doesn't make sense for you guys to think, oh, we've got it and here's what it is. More just put this on so that you might be aware that in the coming months, as you are thinking about what the commission wishes to accomplish in the next year, that I think working with a new staff person, what ideas would you like to bring? Are there projects that this group wishes to accomplish?
Well, I'm still open to doing another community tree planting program, as you and I did with the 15-gallon container trees. It would really depend on, could I get, the kind of help we had last time from, say, Dave Nickerson with his two trucks that showed up 3 days beforehand, and how much the staff person wants to work on. But I can certainly work on, and we can model the current grant with the last grant we used.
Yep.
Was that 2013?
Oh, it does feel like it was about 5 years ago. I'd have to revisit it. I think it was that, or maybe it was 2014.
Yeah,
four or five years ago.
14, I think, sounds about right. And to that end, getting into, oh, we're not in correspondence yet, but never mind.
I do have something for you, Conservation Commission. At last night's planning board work session, we discussed the...
I was ill. I couldn't make it.
I'm sorry. We discussed draft amendments to Mr. Rowe section. The planning board is going to recommend those amendments to the council at their next regular session. But it came up that an update to the Ministerial Road Stewardship Plan is necessary. The planning board has no bandwidth for that right now. They have to start the Route 1 stewardship plan, as you can imagine, plus everything else that they're doing. So the recommendation was made that the Conservation Commission maybe take that on as your project.
Now, how would the new one be different from what exists now?
Well, I think the idea is to review it, make sure it's still valid, add things to it that might be needed, take things
sure.
out, really just to sort of revalidate and revisit it.
Yep.
There was also, I guess, at the time, a design plan that was done for Ministerial Road that is a completely separate document.
Correct.
And so to sort of merge the two together into something that is more comprehensive. So I don't think it needs to start from scratch by any means. It would really be sort of a review and revisiting and validating of what's there with the folks who live on Ministerial Road.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean by a design plan?
It's a plan for the roadway itself, so front, within the right-of-way.
Like aesthetics?
The aesthetics.
Like, how, like examples of how people should develop?
Well, it's also...
Not outside of the roadway.
Right.
It's what, inside of the right-of-way.
Oh, the town-owned portion?
DOT-owned portion.
RIDOT actually proposed eliminating hills, rises, and straightening out the roads.
Seriously?
Yes, and that's what prompted the town to get going on having this stewardship program. That was the impetus.
Yeah.
And so they had a big workshop at Curtis Corner School.
That sounds
school.
Way too safe.
Yeah. It was, what, 12,
50 miles an hour.
Pardon me?
It was 20 years
ago? Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So the design plan was, this is our preference for design, not straight, keep the hills.
And there wasn't a single person in the room who thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
For one thing, RIDOT, one of their motivations was that it would make the road safer.
Are you kidding? People would just go five times
faster. That's exactly what came up.
And think of the environmental impact.
No, everything. Yeah. Okay, any other...
What about the planning board's work on subdivision regulations?
It's ongoing.
So I'm afraid that by the time we ever see it, it'll be a done deal.
Well, if you want, I can forward you the minutes from, not minutes, but agendas for the various work plans.
And I can't make every meeting. Don't they just have drafts available?
At the well, it's a discussion.
So they must have drafts to review at the meetings.
It changes meeting to meeting.
Yeah, so we have drafts to review at each meeting. The drafts are available sort of article by article.
Right.
So the last one, last night's meeting, we reviewed the section on the procedure related to development.
Mm-hmm.
The section specifically that would include like stormwater management is in the article on physical improvement standards.
Mm-hmm.
Josh and I, when Josh was here, drafted sort of a first run at that. Mm-hmm. Rich Bourbonnais, now that he's here, is sort of taking a relook at everything in that, from the road improvement standards to drainage and everything in between. So that draft, I would say, is not ready for anybody's consumption, even the planning board.
That makes sense.
We're just sort of still working on it. Mm-hmm. Once it's ready, once Rich has reviewed it, we're going to take it to the planning board for a sort of preliminary review.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to have the first crack at it, their document, and then it can go and sort of get farmed out for extra comments. It will also have a public hearing, the whole document. That's how it gets adopted. So
right.
There's probably two points for the commission to sort of get involved. It'll be after the planning board reviews it first, once mm-hmm. Rich has looked at it, and then again maybe during the public hearing process.
Okay. So what's the time frame for that?
I don't know. The development plan review bit I have had on the planning board's agenda for the past four meetings, and we just haven't gotten to it because they're mm-hmm. so busy.
Yeah.
So I put it second on their agenda last night so we can get through it.
Right.
And we're going bit by bit because it's... I don't have an estimate on that. I was hoping that it would all be done by the end of the summer. This is not happening.
Okay. Is the checklist done?
The checklists are adopted. They were adopted in October.
Okay.
For applications. So you can find all of that. All of the checklists are online on the planning department's website.
I wasn't sure whether they were old or new.
They are new. We are making slight modifications when we adopt the full regulations again. There's a few things that as we use them, they just don't seem right. So it'll be small modifications, but that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Item I, election of officers.
So this is something that we do every year, and we generally do it in our mid-summer meeting. So you guys have gone through, the long-term members have gone through this a few times, but it's a fairly simple process of, I think, before there's a formal nomination, if there's anybody that's interested in a position that doesn't have one, you know, just let it be known. If there's somebody that has a position is interested in not having it anymore, let that be known. But generally, someone will make a motion to nominate, and you can nominate one person or you can nominate for a slate of positions. And there are three, a chair, a vice chair, and a secretary. Generally, you guys... see the process that works. The secretary has a role of and making sure that the minutes are done and that the agendas are done. As you guys know, generally the staff.
No one wants that job now that you're leaving.
Well, now that I'm leaving, yeah, you never know if, like, you know, we decided how we can maintain an even keel work.
We'll have Jimmy come to our meetings.
Yeah. But I generally the thought is that you have, you know, a 1, 2, and 3 in command. And at this point, for any of our boards and commissions, the secretary's purpose is largely to be there if, in the case, the chair and the vice chair can't. They're the person that would run a meeting. Mm-hmm. If they can't make it, then we definitely have real quorum issues. Right. So,
I'd be willing to continue unless somebody else wants to step in.
I'd be more than happy to nominate you as chair again.
Our current vice chair is Mary.
I'm okay with it unless someone else wants it.
I'll nominate Mary.
And then our current secretary is Jennifer, so it's really tough for her to say anything either way.
I think this is what happened the first time.
I think that is exactly what happened. Jennifer got nominated because she wasn't at the meeting. Exactly. And we said, and she literally was like, "You really did that?" Yes, we really did that.
Well, I'll nominate her.
All right. So I think that actually the easiest way from a minute perspective is for one person to make a motion to nominate that the slate of current officers continue their position.
Well, I guess I can make that motion.
You make that motion?
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All
right.
Motion passes. Correspondence?
None.
I have some.
Oh, do you?
Yes. I successfully got in touch with Rob Zarnetsky. We're going to talk about tree situation in town, aging tree stock, possible planting programs. The impetus behind that, we're doing that on Friday morning, and the impetus behind it is if we are going to go forward with an America the Beautiful grant, one of the criteria, and it's a major one, is it has to be integrated with a sustainable tree program in town, which we don't have, so are not articulated. The last articulation we got was from the previous town manager saying there will be no more tree planting in South Kingstown. So,
whose name will go on?
He seems very receptive to talking about this. I don't know. Certainly the budget is going to be a problem. But any rate, he seems receptive to discussing all of this. So I went ahead and so
good.
I'll let you know.
That's great.
That's Friday morning at 9.
Excellent.
I did speak with Eric Schneider. He said he was going to contact you. Did
he? He did. I can give you guys an informal heads up. So if you recall, Eric Schneider had the DEM application for restoration sites.
Restoration being a euphemism, obviously.
in Congdon Cove in Point Judith, and he is looking to identify alternative sites based on the recommendation that came from this group. He is actually the reason why we are now thinking about an August meeting. Our first goal was to not have an August meeting if there wasn't pertinent business, because it gives staff a break while we are down a person. Eric now has a desire to submit an alterated plan to CRMC with
alterated, new... Alterated, also not a word.
Yeah, well...
Yeah. Alternative. Alternative. Okay, you're going
give to
transfer.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is going to make good minutes for my last meeting.
That should this be spelled exactly.
It's
can you spell that?
Yeah. Yeah. You're taking a big boy job. You this stuff. No.
So he is going to... basically submit to CRMC, and his goal is more from a timing perspective. In order for him to keep his project alive, he needed to take certain actions in this fall, which now the change of course is kind of putting that project in jeopardy. So the difference between us reviewing his project in August and reviewing his project in September, from the way CRMC would take it from there and then make its final application approval, actually was a game changer, which is why we're going to add that as an item to our August review. So just as an informal heads up that you can anticipate a revised application from DEM for our review at the next meeting.
Right. And before we adjourn, this is for Doug.
What'd you get? Oh, it looks like it's a bottle.
It is.
Oh, it's my favorite kind of gift.
Hey, what about our gift?
But wait,
I mean, that was a kind of gift. Look at that. Thank you very much. Actually, Pinot is my favorite kind of red.
It's a Flander Grower.
It's a Flander Grower. What? You can be a Flander Grower.
Yes, it had been mine. It's well used.
It's been broken in.
It's been proven.
Man, I love that. David, if you need one, you know we have a few in the office.
I know. It's.
Did you know about Flander Grabbers?
No.
Yes. You better explain it quick.
I want to know.
You do want to know, because you're going to be the person that eventually is going to have to figure out what we do with the box of them in my office.
Okay.
We have, I think it's like at least six, but it might even be like up to 10 of these. They live in a box underneath the first desk to the right when you come into my office. And there's something that did not get cleared out. There's something that still lives in my office.
Okay.
Yeah. And I talked with Ginny about it. I talked with Ginny about it because I was like, Ginny, this will be great for the next person to figure out. But basically, the Concom, three or four years ago, used some of its funds to buy these to assist it with its own litter cleanup efforts. This is a litter cleanup device.
And those pincers can pick up a dime. They can pick up a straw. They're really great.
A dime?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, when it comes to a point.
Check. So,
just want to test this out.
Yeah, this was purchased to assist either the Concom or any town group that wanted to do like litter maintenance, cleanup efforts moving forward. So we have these.
You really should not have let me know that those are there. I'm gonna start using them to pinch.
Whatever you
go for it. Well, I mean, I didn't let you know that you were there because your goal was like clean out this office, and I was like, well, you know what, Jenny, let the next person know that they should be thinking about it.
If anyone walks into Doug's office, you should go down there now and take a look at it because it is a whole different place.
Well, Doug, nothing says Concom like the Flander.
Like the Flander Grabbers. Right.
Now you can change the face of Cranston right there.
That's yes.
One dime at a time.
One cigarette.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. This is very kind of you. You didn't have to do anything, but I will drink this. I will drink this and use this at the same time.
Yes. What's missing?
Thank you.
Good luck in your new job.
I appreciate it. It's been good.
What's missing is your linguistics for Cranston tutorial that maybe.
Yeah.
Did Carol tell us this today? No, that was Mitsuke. She's like, she said, throw me the shoes
the baby
up
the stairs.
Throw up the stairs, the shoes, or something.
Throw up the stairs.
Oh, yeah. It has a lot to do with how the French form their sentences.
Where your verbs and your pronouns go. Yes.
So our meeting is now adjourned.
Very good.
Very good.
All right. Good luck, Deb.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, sir.
See if that works, huh?
Thank you, Chelsea. We look forward to seeing you.
Still looks red.
You are welcome, at least for a short term.
For a little while.